Welcome to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. Craig Johnson, straight-talking lawman, Sheriff Walt Longmire, has captured the hearts of readers in 11 best-selling novels and the hit television series Longmire, which is now on Netflix. And for 11 Christmases now, Craig Johnson has released a story of an off-duty Sheriff Walt Longmire to subscribers to his newsletter. He's now collected those and added a story. There's 12 stories in the new collection, Wait for Signs, 12 Longmire stories. In these stories, the sheriff finds himself mistaken for a deity, elbowed into starring as the ghost of Christmas past, and trapped with an owl in a porta potty. And another novel is out as well, Dry Bones, featuring the fossil of a dinosaur. Craig Johnson lives in Ucross, Wyoming, population 25, elevation, I believe, 4,085. He's on book tour now, and he's coming to Salt Lake City. His event, sponsored by the King's English Bookshop, will be at the Viridian Event Center, which is in West Jordan, and that's on Thursday evening at 7 o'clock. We welcome in Craig Johnson to Access Utah. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, good to be here. You did your research, too. Not too many people know the elevation of my town.
Well, I was looking at the picture. You're in your pickup truck. And, well, that's a separate one. You're posing in front of the sign. I always like those signs. especially in the West, you have the elevation.
Well, you can always count in Wyoming that the elevation will certainly be a lot higher than the population.
That's right. And you've said elsewhere you're not even sure Ucross has 25. You invited a lot of people over. You only counted 19 at one point.
Yeah, I think we're still elevated from the last census, but it costs a lot of money to change those signs. So I don't think
that's true.
We'll change it anytime soon.
it'll be stuck at 25. so
we are.
You're not originally from Wyoming. I think you grew up in West Virginia, right?
Well, that's where I was born. Yeah,
that's where you born.
I had family up in Judith Gap, Montana, and Hobbs, New Mexico,
okay.
Lawrence, Kansas, and a lot of other places too. Like that. So I was, kind of keyed, to be a Westerner all the way from the get go.
How's a kid from the East make his way out to live in Ucross, Wyoming?
Well, I was working as a cowboy up in Montana, actually, delivered horses down there when I was in my 20s, just fell in love with that area, my grandfather was a blacksmith, and like I said, I had family all scattered through the West, and so it wasn't a difficult transition to make, I just looked around there at that little town, at the base of the Bighorn Mountains, right at the confluence of Clear and Piney Creeks, and I just thought, boy, if I ever get the chance, this might be where it is that I want to, want to live like that. And it took a while to get the money together to be able to buy some property like that. But then, poured the concrete, stacked the logs, and, built the whole ranch myself. And finally got that done and then decided, you've always wanted to write a novel. Like that, now would be the chance to do that. And that's when I sat down and wrote the first Walt Longmire novel, The Cold Dish.
Before we get into that, I was reading about this log cabin. It came as a kit.
Well, that's kind of a euphemistic term, for what it was that arrived. What arrived was a pile of logs. Is what arrived.
You were envisioning something more organized.
Anything you get a fine tune with a chainsaw, I feel like I can probably handle it.
Yeah, a chainsaw is a great fine tuner. That's right. Yeah. And you built this into a nice cabin. You've really built out the ranch. Tell me how Cold Dish came about.
It was a point in time, like I hear about 12 years ago, whenever, it seemed like, everything was all CSI, everything was all, ballistics and forensics and DNA evidence and all this kind of stuff. And so I ran into a DCI investigator, Division of Criminal Investigation investigator there in Wyoming. And I just asked him, I said, how long does it take you guys to get DNA evidence? And he paused for a second, and he goes, is this a high-profile case? And I said, yeah, let's pretend like it's a high-profile case. And he said, about 9 months. And so I thought, that's not particularly honest what they're doing on the television and in all of these books and everything, is it? And he goes, no, it's not. And so I thought, what if you did a police procedural, a crime fiction novel where the protagonist was the sheriff of the least populated county in the least populated state in America, it would kind of force you to deal more, with character and place and those type of things. And I just thought, that might be something interesting. And it turned out, we've been on the New York Times bestsellers list 7 years running now. We've got a TV show on Netflix, like that's pulling in, you know, it was pulling in about 6 million people a night. And so I guess it was the right choice to make, I guess.
Yeah, certainly it has resonated. A lot of fans around. In fact, I was reading, there's an experience. I wonder if I could have you tell this. You encountered a lady with a t-shirt. I can't remember how it goes.
Actually, no, it was a hat.
Oh, a hat, okay. Tell me that story.
I spent a lot of time like that, you know, traveling around like that, you know, and touring like that, especially, you know, in our area there, you know, all around Wyoming, you know, and Montana and Utah and Idaho and all of that. Sometimes on my motorcycle like that. And so I was in Red Lodge, Montana, like that. And when I'm not wearing my cowboy hat, I'm wearing one of the Absaroka County Sheriff's Department ball caps, you know, and Absaroka County doesn't exist. It's what I refer to as the 24th county in Wyoming, and they're only 23. And I had that hat on, like that. You know, most, if you didn't know there was no 24th county in Wyoming, if you didn't know there was no Absaroka County, they looked pretty real. And so I was having lunch in Red Lodge, and went to go pay for lunch, and I was writing a check for lunch, like that. And that kind of gives you an indication of what kind of place it is. You can still write a check for lunch, and so I was writing it up, like that, and the woman on the other side of the counter, she looks at me and she says, "Where'd you get that hat?" And she said it real aggressive, like, and I thought, oh no, she thinks I'm a real sheriff's deputy, and somebody's dying and ditched. I'm going to have to go chase somebody down the main street of Red Lodge, Montana. And I looked at her and I said, "Well, it's not a real county." Like, and she goes, "The hell it's not. It's Walt Longmire's county." And, you know, I felt like I'd been smacked, you know, and so I said, "Well, I'm Craig Johnson. I'm the one that writes the books." And she goes, "What books?" Like, and I said, "The books the TV show is based off of," and she says, "There are books." Okay, and so that's kind of like, you know, kept me in my place, you know, as far as you know, just staying humble as the years have gone by, like that. But yeah, it's pretty amazing, like that. You know, the effect that Hollywood can have. But you know, we're kind of happy with the way things have worked out.
Yeah, very very gratifying. She's a big fan.
It would appear. Yeah,
there's another place you were. I guess you were doing some research and. The Powder River Basin, and encountered, Longmire Night at a bar?
You have done your research. Yeah, that was out near Arvada, like that, in a little town out on the Powder River, like that. And I mean, when somebody from a town of 25 says this place is in the middle of nowhere, it's in the middle of nowhere. And I was out there like that, and, you know, I decided I'd stop in. You know, did a lot of research, you know, riding around like that, you know, and checking locations and doing that type of thing, talking to people, getting stories from folks like that. And, you know, this one was, you know, a little bar was out there, you know, and I stopped in like that. And I walked in and there was a big sign on the bar back that said Longmire and Longnecks Monday night. And so I asked the bartender, I said, "What's the story on this?" And he goes, "Oh yeah." He says, "You know, we run an episode of Longmire on Monday nights, and then we have Rainier beer," which is the beer that, you know, Walt Longmire drinks, you know, in the books and in the TV show. And he said, "You know, we get a crowd in here," like that. You know, and I said, "Well, that's really great." Like, and he goes, "No, Craig, you don't understand. These old ranchers, they haven't come in here and watched the TV show since Gunsmoke was on. So it's been a little bit of a drought in Westerns like that, but we're kind of glad to be able to fill that gap."
Mm-hmm. That's a key word. I wanted to ask you about that. These novels, Westerns? Are you a Western writer?
I don't know. I mean, you know, I'm not a big one for genres. You know, I'm not a big one for pigeonholing, you know, your writing. I mean, in the final analysis, the only thing there really is good writing and bad writing. And, you know, I don't know. I mean, for me, it's always fun to try and work, you know, in the borders of all those genres, you know, to try and do something a little bit different. I mean, whenever you're writing Westerns, whenever you're writing crime fiction, you know, you're working in those genres like that, and you are... you're going to have a certain amount of baggage, you know, that goes along with it. You know, not only the baggage that you're carrying, but the expectations, you know, that the readers are going to have and viewers are going to have. And, you know, for me, it's important, you know, to be aware of that high context kind of relationship that you have with the people that read the books. Like, make sure that you take advantage of that opportunity. So, you know, the trick is trying to do something different, not fall prey to all of those stereotypes and cliches, you know. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of humor in the books, you know, and so it kind of pokes fun a little bit at, you know, some of those sacred cows, and tries to do something a little bit different with that.
Mm-hmm. A real sense of place, which, you know, you live there, right? And
Well, yeah, I mean, I wake up in Walt's world, you know, pretty much every day like that, you know, and, I think it's an opportunity. I think it would be difficult to just try and write these books if I lived in a one-bedroom apartment on West Pico Boulevard in Los Angeles or something. And so, you know, for me, you know, I mean, I've got a ranch that I built, you know, and so, you know, every day I'm out, you know, whether it's, you know, working with irrigation or stock, you know, or anything like that. It's a good life like that because it's kind of a nice balance, you know, between the cerebral world of, you know, spending your time somewhere in front of a keyboard with your imaginary friends, you know, and then also, you know, being out and in that natural world, which I think it has such a, you know, makes such an impression on the books.
Mm-hmm. It would be different, yeah, if Walt Longmire were working out of a one-bedroom apartment on Pico. Although I'd kind of like to read that story. So I'll put in that request.
You never know. Yeah. You never know. Like that, I mean, that's never say never is what I always say.
Right.
Like that. But this one, you know, the book that's out now is a little different from some of the others like that because it is a collection of short stories. And, you know, they're little vignettes, they're little portions of the books like that wouldn't quite fit into the novels. But, you know, being with a press like Viking Penguin, it gives me an opportunity to have a little bit more freedom to do a lot of the things that I really want to do. They really don't put much pressure on me as far as, you know, what it is that I write about. I can write about anything. Like that. And you know, the way it started out was the first short story, Old Indian Trick, was actually in Cowboys and Indians magazine, like that, with the Tony Hillerman Award. And I kind of sent it out to everybody for Christmas for free, like that. Everybody was on my my newsletter, the Post-it, you know, which is at CraigAllenJohnson.com. And I didn't know what kind of trouble I was making for myself until the next November when everybody started writing and saying, when is the next free Christmas story coming out? And I hadn't written one. Like that. And so I had to get busy and started going on it. So that's how pretty much all of the short stories got going after about, you know, 9 or 10 years, you know, Viking Penguin said, hey, why don't we put out an anthology of their short stories? So we did. And it's a nice little grouping of stories for folks.
Yeah, I guess if you come year two, if you expected not to have to write the second story, you found out different. The fans wanted it. So these are fun. It's the sheriff off duty, right?
It kind of is. Like, I mean, they're the kind of stories that, you know, that would probably stop a novel dead in the water, like that. And so they kind of have to stand on their own, like that. And it gives me an opportunity to work, you know, in a different medium that, you know, you got to hit the ground running on a short story. There's not a lot of room, you know, for elaboration. You have to have something to say, and you better get to it pretty quick. Like that. And so it was kind of a fun, you know, medium to work in. I mean, I've already got one written for this Christmas that I'll send out to everybody on the newsletter. I always wait until 11:59. Mountain Standard Time, like that, and then send it out on Christmas Eve. And so it's a nice thing to do for people, you know, and provide something for free like that when everybody's out there trying to make a buck.
Yeah. So for people not familiar with Longmire, tell me about Walt Longmire.
Walt Longmire is a little bit different from the usual protagonist that you have in crime fiction in that, I mean, usually they're these 6'2" of twisted steel and sex appeal. Every woman wanted him. Every man feared him. He could kill anyone with a Ticonderoga pencil in 3.2 seconds kind of guys. And I don't know about you, but I look in the mirror every morning. That's not the guy that I see. And so I tried to make Walt a little bit different. He's a little bit more like us. You know, he's what I tend to refer to as over. He's overweight. He's overage. He's overly depressed. But he still gets up in the morning and tries to do the job. And, you know, for me, that's true heroism. That's somebody that, you know, that seems a little bit more believable than a lot of the characters that you tend to see in a lot of these thriller and mystery novels.
Mm-hmm.
He's also the sheriff of the least populated county in the least populated state in America. And it gives a basis to the books, you know, and it kind of informs the books, you know, and makes them, you know, a little bit more, you know, developed as far as, like, place and character are concerned. And, you know, we've been very fortunate, like, that there's been an audience for those books, like that, and an audience for the TV show, too.
Mm-hmm. Why sheriff? Why'd you make him a sheriff?
You know, that's a good question. Like, and one of the main reasons was that I'm always explaining that the books have been translated into about 12 languages, and so I sometimes do tours, you know, in foreign countries like that, and a lot in Europe like that. And it's kind of funny because I have to explain, you know, what a sheriff is. You know, that it's the only elected law enforcement official in the United States. That not only are you a police officer, but you also have to be a politician. You have to be able to go out, you know, and get votes like that, or else you're going to be selling used cars in 4 years. And so what it does, though, is it kind of makes Walt, you know, in connection, you know, with the populace, you know, the constituency and the people whose laws it is that he's been elected to enforce. One of the things I really wanted Walt to do was be emblematic of that small community in the contemporary American West, and have something to say about that. And to have Walt be a sheriff allowed him to be involved with a lot more cases and a lot more situations than, you know, a general police officer would be involved with, you know. And so it was that, and then it was also the iconoclastic aspects of, you know, I mean, when you think of, you know, Western law enforcement, what's the first thing you think of? You think of a sheriff. And, you know, and I'm not, you know, ignorant enough to think that, you know, I'm not also drawing, you know, from that epic American Western romanticism. Like that, I mean, it's a, as you well know, like that, you know, because you're in the West same as me, like that, you know, it's a pretty fantastic place to be. Like that, and one of the joys of the books is to try and be honest about it, try and tell it the way it is. And that's something that I try and do with each and every novel in some sort of different way.
And Walt is not an anti-hero. I believe he's a hero. Anti-hero has kind of become all the rage.
You know, we kind of went through a period there, you know, in the 60s where, you know, the anti-heroes became, you know, kind of the de rigueur like that. And it seems like it's done nothing but, you know, hyper-accelerate here to the point in the last couple of years where you can't tell the good guys from the bad guys. And, you know, for me, you know, yeah, Walt does kind of harken back, you know, a little bit to, you know, some of those, you know, cowboy heroes of the past. I mean, he's got a code that he lives by, and I guess the word that I always use in describing Walt is that he's decent. He's decent, and he cares about people, and he tries to do the right thing. That doesn't mean that he's, you know, absolutely perfect or that he's right every single time, you know, but he's still out there every day, you know, trying, which I think is, you know, kind of emblematic of an awful lot of us. You know, we're all out there trying the best we can every day, whether we get it done or not, you know. Well, you know, it's a complex world here in the modern and contemporary American West, you know, and we all do the best we can.
We're going to talk a little bit about law enforcement. You have a bit of background in law enforcement, right? And the potential downside is you can get a jaundiced view of humankind. It could be a kind of a depressing job.
Absolutely. I mean, the things that, you know, you come in contact with, I mean, you're going to be in contact with people that, you know, are in their very best, you know, and then you're also going to be in, you know, in contact with people at their very worst. So it's one of those things where, you know, you have to be prepared, you know, and you have to be, you know, willing to realize the sacrifices that you're going to make, you know. And but I think that that's, you know, one of the joys also of writing the books, you know, is trying to do something that's, you know, it's honest. You know, most generally, you know, Walt is not going to run into Al-Qaeda in Crook County, Wyoming. Walt is not going to, you know, come up against, you know, Professor Moriarty. I mean, an awful lot of the time what you meet is people who've made mistakes like that, and then, you know, they try and cover those mistakes or try and make things, you know, better by just making things worse, you know. And an awful lot of the stories that I get, you know, for my books tend to come from newspaper articles, you know, whether they, everywhere I go when I'm on tour, I'm always picking up newspapers, you know, from small towns, because I think what that does is kind of keep the books, you know, grounded in a reality that I think, you know, that makes Walt a little bit more of a believable character. And, you know, with those type of things, I think that's one of those things that that keep the character, you know, grounded in a reality too.
And you've covered a lot of things in the novels. You've you know, human trafficking, polygamy, fracking. You know, there's a wide range of things.
That's kind of scratching the surface. I've hit a lot of, like, social issues. But, I mean, I think that's, you know, this it kind of, like, you know, to be expected. I mean, I think there probably was a period in time, you know, when you could just write a Western or you could just write crime fiction, you know, whodunits like that, you know, and just have clever ideas like that. But kind of like Voltaire said, clever ideas come and go like that. And I think nowadays, you know, what's happened is that readers, you know, and viewers tend to be just a little bit more sophisticated. You know, that they want all the same things, you know, in crime fiction or in Westerns that they get in literary fiction. They want to, you know, fully, you know, develop characters. They want a sense of place. They want social commentary, they want humor, they want history, they want all those things. They also want to know who the heck did it by the time they get to the end. And so it kind of raises the bar a little bit, but I think that that's, you know, what makes the books, you know, enjoyable to write, knowing that you've got a pretty sophisticated audience out there that's taking the book seriously. That's a joy.
And I think, you know, a mystery reader wants to be able to try to piece it together as they go.
Oh, absolutely. You got to... you got to play by the rules. You know, you have to be fair. Like, you have to give them all of the tools that you're giving your protagonist, you know, to be able to solve the crime, you know, on an equal footing. Like that, you know, and that's, it's a little bit easier because, you know, in the books, you know, the books are written in first person. So, I mean, you're pretty much, you know, in Walt Longmire's head, you know, all the way for, you know, 350 some pages like that. And so it's important, you know, that you be fair. And allow the readers like that to be able to have a chance to try and, you know, solve the problems the same way Walt does.
We're talking with Craig Johnson. He is a New York Times bestselling author of 12 Walt Longmire mystery novels. He's out with a new collection of his short stories, Longmire short stories, Wait for Signs, it's called. The latest novel, by the way, is Dry Bones. I want to talk a little bit about that as well. And Craig Johnson will be coming to Utah as part of the latest book tour. This event from the King's English Bookshop will be not at King's English, but at the Viridian Event Center in West Jordan. And it's this Thursday, 7 p.m., free and open to the public. Let's take a break. More with Craig Johnson when we return.
This is Management Minute by Professor Scott Hammond, the USU Shingo MBA program at the John M. Huntsman School of Business. A 15-month graduate degree for executives giving knowledge and skills to leverage the principles and tools of lean continuous improvement. Huntsman.usu.edu.
This is Management Minute by Professor Scott Hammond.
Strong leaders realize they don't know everything. They listen more than they speak. They invite ideas from everyone and facilitate communication between all. One plant manager works on the shop floor a couple of days a month in order to stay in touch with his employees. Another company president answers phone calls when customer volume goes up. Leading with humility means creating an environment where respect replaces fear, where all jobs are valued. One business owner decided to eliminate her reserved parking and moved her work desk into a cubicle with others. She said excellence is a team sport.
The Management Minute is brought to you by our members and the USU Shingo MBA program at the John M. Huntsman School of Business, a 15-month graduate degree for executives giving knowledge and skills to leverage the principles and tools of lean continuous improvement. Huntsman.usu.edu.
Thanks for listening to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. We're talking with Craig Johnson. He's a resident of U-Cross, Wyoming, northern Wyoming, a beautiful part of the world, population 25. His Straight Talking Lawman, Sheriff Walt Longmire, has been featured in 12 now, I think, best-selling novels, and the hit drama series, which is now on Netflix, Longmire. And he's now out with a collection of Longmire short stories. The sheriff is off duty in these stories. The trademark humor is present. One of these stories, he's trapped with an owl in a porta potty. He is elbowed into starring as the ghost of Christmas Past, and he finds himself mistaken for a deity. Just some of the stories. And Craig Johnson is coming to Utah as part of the latest book tour. He will be in Salt Lake City area for the King's English Bookshop. This event is at the Viridian Event Center in West Jordan, and it's Thursday evening at 7 o'clock. Craig Johnson's novels have garnered several awards as well. And I believe, Craig Johnson, you're just back from France. It's on your website. Did you make that trip?
I am. That's a constant source of irritation to all the other authors that I know. They're always like, "Oh, so you're going to France again?" Like that. We've actually been there about 17 times.
What's the deal with France?
You know, I wish I knew. Like, I wish I knew what it was. We've just that the books are on the bestsellers list in France, and I got to tell you, my street cred around the ranch went way up whenever I started taking my wife to Paris about two or three times a year. Actually, you know, it's interesting. I'm very fortunate in the sense that I've got a really wonderful French publisher and a really wonderful French translator. And the more that I've learned as the books have been translated, that you know, if you get a good translator, you get a good book and you get a good response. If you get a bad translator, you get a bad book and you don't get much response. And so I've been very fortunate to be working with some really good folks, you know, there in France, and people respond to the books. I think, you know, that they respond to the idea of these, you know, really developed characters in the contemporary American West. You know, they're just very responsive to that. Like that, and we just got back from another trip over there where we won a bunch of awards. Look at, and are on the bestsellers list again.
I don't know if you've been other places in Europe. Do you think the French respond more to the, you know, novel set in the American West than other countries, or?
It's pretty amazing, like the response that the French have had, like that. But you know, the British have gone crazy, like you know, for the television show, and so now the books are taking off. But also Spanish, like a Czech. I mean, there are a lot of different you know, countries and languages like that that we've been very fortunate enough to get a really good response in. But you know, in a lot of ways, you know, I think they're responding the same way that, you know, that American readers respond. You know, Walt's a good guy to spend time with. You know, he's it's the same reason why I enjoy writing the books, you know, every year. I really enjoy his company, and you know, I think that's might be why it is that the readers respond to the books the way that they do.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you about that. Good company for you as well. I was reading another interview that I've never done irrigating, but I can respond to this. My grandfather was a farmer. apparently, irrigation can get you in a foul mood, and your wife tells you to go right when you come in from irrigating.
You know, the irrigation is it's the bane of my existence. Like that, you know, and you know, whenever you live, you know, in the high desert, you know, whether it be Utah or Wyoming or anywhere like that, you know, you've got three components that are involved: electrical, mechanical, and hydraulic. And I guarantee, if you get two of them to work, the other will fail. And yeah, you know, so that you generally the publishers know to not get in touch with me during irrigation season like that. And the only thing that'll bring me out of the funk and of irrigation season is usually going up and actually writing on the books.
And what is it about Walt Longmire that you like spending time with?
You know, I think that, you know, first of all, like that, like I said, he's a decent guy. Like that, I think he's the perfect guy for the job. I mean, the way I describe it is, if you're, you know, slide off the road on I-80 in January, this is the guy you want pulling up behind you. Like that, because he's decent, he's kind, he's good-hearted, he cares about people. All of these things, you know, that are important. But then again, you know, he's also extraordinarily smart. He's very, very smart. He's very, very funny. You know, one of the things that I get periodically whenever I'm traveling is people will come up to me, and especially in the East, and they'll say, you know, well, boy, that Walt Longmire sure is smart for a Wyoming sheriff. And I'm not sure which part I want to take umbrage with, the fact that he's a sheriff of Wyoming. Like, but it's, you know, it's part of his character. Like, you know, Walt, you know, he was an English major at USC, like that, and then, you know, when he graduated, he lost his deferment, you know, and went to Vietnam and became a military policeman over there. Was one of the first Marine investigators in 1968. And, you know, when he got back, you know, he was looking for a job, and he got married and was going to have a kid. And I think Walt would have probably been happier, you know, working in a library or a bookstore like that. But, you know, they weren't hiring like that, and the Anacostia County Sheriff's Department was. And so he began his career, you know, in law enforcement, and you know, one of the longest standing sheriffs in Wyoming history. Like, and it probably makes for better reading. I don't know if people would want to read the books if Walt was just a librarian. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, there again, that might be interesting. But I wonder, is there a, you know, a stereotype of Wyoming out there? You know,
I think there's always going to be stereotypes, you know, of the American West, you know, and of sheriffs, you know, and all of those type of things. You know, those stereotypes and cliches are the fun part, though, like, because Walt, you know, gets to go up against those cliches and stereotypes. There's, you know, actually one instance where he's working up on the Northern Cheyenne Reservation with a tribal police chief, Lolo Long, like that, and she's an Iraqi war veteran, and she looks at Walt, she says, "Did you serve?" And Walt says, "Yes, I did." And she looks back at him and says, "Union or Confederacy?" And so, you know, that's kind of one of the fun parts of the books, is to take, you know, some of those preconceived notions and then kind of flip them a little bit, you know, and that's where the humor kind of comes in handy.
Yeah. Yeah, that reminds me. I always used to ask my dad that question. He served in World War II, and I mm-hmm. would often, you know, ask him to tell me about the Civil War. He never found it all that funny. I laughed a lot, but he never found it that funny.
Well, there you go. Yeah. Okay.
So I wonder, you have this county, and in fact, you know, you have hats and probably T-shirts, and you know, it makes me think of William Faulkner. I don't know if you made that connection. He, you know, he centered all his books in a Yucatapa County in Mississippi.
And oh, yeah,
he's centered in just one place.
There are a lot of smarter writers than I am, like that, Hemingway, Faulkner, all of these guys. They figured out pretty quickly like that having a fictitious county to work in would give them the literary license to do what it is that they're doing. I mean, the statement that I always make is that I'm not writing documentaries, and I don't want them to be mistaken as documentaries. Like that, they're fiction, they're novels, like that. And of course, the first indication of that maybe that was a direction I should go in was when I was doing. I do a lot of ride-alongs with a lot of sheriffs and deputies and highway patrol there in Wyoming. Like that, and an awful lot of the stories, certainly the more unbelievable stories that I have, in my books are always taken from actual accounts. From them like that. But I was actually riding along with Larry Kirkpatrick, who was the previous sheriff in Johnson County, Wyoming, like at my home county. And I was, riding along with him like that. And he was reading the very first book in the Walt Longmire series, The Cold Dish. And he said, well, you got a mistake right there in the first chapter. And I said, well, what's that? And he goes, well, if you take a right on Ford Street, the next street up on the left is not Aspen. And I was like, oh, I am not going to fight that stuff for the rest of my life. Hello, fictitious county. And that's pretty much how Absarokee County was born.
Yeah. What do you get from those ride-alongs? What do you learn? What's the company like?
Oh, a lot of it's just so outrageous. You don't ever underestimate the things that, that human beings can get themselves, caught up in. One of the funniest stories that I ever heard was that there was a one where, a sheriff's deputy had to pull a woman over because her husband was tied with a piece of rope to the back of her car. Like, fortunately, the roads were icy, and he was just sliding along back there waving at people, till the deputy could get her pulled over. And what had happened was he was up on the roof trying to clean the chimney out like that, and he'd tied himself off, to the car, and she didn't know that and took off with him, tied to the back. Like, and he'd come off the roof and landed in a pile of snow, thank goodness, and then went skimming down the road like that. And that was the beginning of Junkyard Dogs, one of the previous books. But, people would write me and say, boy, that's kind of an outrageous story, like that, kind of hard to believe. And I would say, well, let me introduce you to Sheriff Goody Pickering of Bighorn County, Montana, who actually had this happen to him. So it's kind of an ongoing joy like that to include some of those small social histories, some of those small social stories like that that are really kind of indicative of, the oddity of being where we are. I mean, that's kind of the wonder of what it is that I do, and one of the joys of what it is that I do. I mean, if I was writing books about the same people getting in the same cars, getting, from the same houses, driving and going to the same offices, to the same jobs, I think I probably would have quit writing these books 10 years ago like that. But, where we live, it's a unique place. Everybody talks about the period West and how magnificent and epic and, romantic and all of this it was. Like, I still think the contemporary American West, may be the heyday and maybe the most interesting period in our history.
Why do you think that is? What makes it so interesting?
Well, I think, it's you do have all of that history to draw from like that. But then again, a lot of times like that, it's not the most populated area in the world. And a lot of times, the more interesting individuals tend to find the more interesting individuals on those frontier edges, of the contemporary American society. We sometimes forget, just how wonderful and special, where it is that we live is, that it is epic, that it is romantic, and that there's, a lot of differences between it and other places in the world. And that includes the people, the people are different, from anywhere else too, like that. And that makes for good novels like that. You don't want to write about, the same people on the same day, the same things happening. You want something unique. You want something that's going to have something to say, a message that'll, get across to people.
And I do think you find some people who have transplanted themselves in the West because they, for various reasons, they want to get away from something, or they want to be isolated, or whatever the reason is.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that whole idea of, that the least populated county and the least populated state, it's going to make for interesting people, and interesting in different ways. Sometimes, they tend to be, far flung, whether it be for the better or the worse like that. And, and to me, that's just where the best stories are going to live, and the best places to write novels about.
Let's take another break. When we come back, we'll have Craig Johnson read a passage from one of his books. The latest books are Wait for Signs. It's a collection of 12 Longmire stories. These are the stories that Craig Johnson puts out Christmas Eve every year to subscribers to his newsletter. And it's called Wait for Signs. The latest novel is Dry Bones. These are all based on the Sheriff Walt Longmire in the fictitious Absaroka County in Wyoming. Craig Johnson lives in Ucross, a ranch out there, population 25. He's coming to Utah for his book tour, and the event is Thursday evening at 7 o'clock in the Viridian Event Center. This is for the King's English Bookshop. Viridian Event Center is in West Jordan, Utah. More following the break.
Programming on Utah Public Radio is made possible in part by our members and the Music Theater West, Death of a Diva Murder Mystery Dinner. October 22nd through the 31st, Music, Mystery, and Mayhem, A Roaring Twenties Whodunit. Dinner buffet begins at 7 p.m. at the Logan Country Club. Reservation information at musictheaterwest.org.
Hey, what's up? I'm Shad. Yotam Ottolenghi is an Israeli chef and author who's making Middle Eastern vegetarian cooking cool. Next time on Q, I'll speak with him about how his backgrounds in journalism and philosophy inspire his food. That's coming up on Q from PRI, Public Radio International.
Join us Tuesday afternoon at 1 on Utah Public Radio.
Thanks for joining us for Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. My guest for the hour is Craig Johnson. He is the author of the best-selling novels featuring Sheriff Walt Longmire. And he's out with a new collection of short stories, 12 Longmire stories. These are the stories that Craig Johnson releases Christmas Eve to subscribers to his newsletter. He's collected all those so far, 11, and he's added one. And it's called Wait for Signs. Craig Johnson will be at the Viridian Event Center in West Jordan on Thursday evening, 7 o'clock, an event for the King's English Bookshop. The event is free and open to the public. Craig Johnson, I think you have one of your books in front of you. I wonder if you'd read us a passage.
Now you're just testing me to see if I really know how to read. Right?
yeah, exactly. We'll see how you do.
This actually is an excerpt from the beginning of the fifth book in the series, The Dark Horse. But it's kind of, you know, chronologically appropriate since it takes place, you know, pretty much at the exact same time that we've arrived at. So this is from The Dark Horse, Chapter 1. It was the third week of a High Plains October, and an unseasonably extended summer had baked the color from the landscape. It turned the rusted girders of the old bridge a thinned out, tired brown. I topped the hill and pulled the gunmetal Lincoln town car along the Pratt Trust structure. There weren't very many of them left in the Powder River country, and the few bridges that were left were being auctioned off to private owners for use on their ranches. I'd grown up with the old Camelback bridges and was sorry to see the last of them go. My eyes were pulled to the town, balanced on the banks of the anemic river, pressed hard against the scoria hills like a singing blade of a sharp knife. The water, the land, the bridge were sepia-toned, depleted. I told Dog to stay in the back seat and got out of the car, slipped on my hat, an aged burnished brown horsehide jacket, and walked across the dirt lot. I studied the dusty, wide plank surface of the bridge and between the cracks, the few reflecting slivers of the Powder River below. The Wyoming Department of Transportation had condemned and in turn posted the bridge with bright yellow signs. It was to be removed next week. I could see the abutments that they'd constructed off to the right and on which the new bridge would soon rest. A Range telephone cooperative trailer sat by a power pole holding a junction box and a blue plastic service phone that gently tapped against the creosote-soaked wood like a forgotten telegraph, receiving no answer. Kind of gives you a little bit of an indication of the territory.
Yeah, exactly. It's I imagine it's a beautiful country. I haven't been to that, to your neck of the woods, but I imagine it's very beautiful.
I have, and I can vouch for it. Like, but yeah. Then again, I've also been a lot through Utah. I got to admit, like that, I used to get all these requests from all these little independent bookstores that wanted to know when it was that Viking Penguin was going to send me to, you know, Baker City, Oregon, or Burns, or places like that. And I would have to tell them, well, no, they're never going to do that. So finally what happened was I had an old motorcycle from 1996, like, and I decided, you know what, I gathered up about a dozen bookstores, like, and decided, you know what, I'll do a big 5,000-mile loop. So whenever I finish the National Book Tour every summer, what I do is jump on my motorcycle and do a big 5,000-mile loop and head a bunch of those independents all up through the Northwest.
Well, that's great. Yeah, that's wonderful. I wondered to talk a little bit about, I think it's Serpent's Tooth. This is of resonance to people in Utah. You feature some lost boys, you know, so-called, because they were kicked out of the FLDS community. Did you read about this and what, picking up the newspapers again, or what? How'd you come to
this? There were, you know, there, I just was, you know, curious to, you know, these young men like that who were, you know, given the boot like that, you know, with some of these groups like that. And it just seemed like such a sad situation, like that these young men, you know, were kind of turned out into modern society, you know, without education, without skills, you know, without anything, you know, to work with like that. And what's been amazing is to see, you know, just how often they're able to turn their lives around like that and really able to implement a life for themselves like that, and in construction situations and all that type of stuff. But I mean, it's just another one of those situations that just struck my interest, you know, and I thought, you know what, I think that, you know, might be something that, you know, Walt Longmire might be involved with, a situation that, you know, that involves people. And those are always the cases that that interest me the most.
Mm-hmm. Serpent's Tooth is an example. I think you got that from Shakespeare.
I did. The tooth quite so sharp as an unthankful child. A lot of times, like that, I draw from you know, whether it be Shakespeare or you know, any number of sources, like at literary sources. You know, Walt's a pretty well-read guy, like that. I mean, there's a reason why it is that, you know, his office is in a defunct, you know, Carnegie Library. And I think that, you know, he's an interesting guy, like that. He's well-read, like that. And so you know, the titles kind of tend to reflect that. It's you know, it's not your, you know, not your grandfather's Western, maybe so much.
Yeah, we've got a couple of Carnegie Libraries, old Carnegie Libraries in Cache Valley, where we are in northern Utah. It's a very, very interesting.
They're just beautiful. Beautiful. I mean, that kind of philanthropic nature, like at the, you know, that you know, Carnegie, you know, went in like that, you know, and provided, you know, for all of these underserved communities like that, you know, and all those little, you know, libraries got built. I mean, the tragedy, of course, is that so many of them got torn down and replaced by a lot of really hideous buildings, like in the 60s and 70s. But some of them still remain like that, and they're just gorgeous little buildings.
Speaking of books, does the bookmobile make its way around, say, Absaroka County?
Not so much. Like that, it's an underserved kind of county, you know, with that kind of a small population. But you know, they do have libraries like that, and then you know, my history with Wyoming libraries is, you know, kind of funny in that. The first library to get in touch with me about doing an event about 10 years ago was a little library over in Meteetse, Wyoming, which is, you know, in the western part of the state, and has a population of about 327 people like that. And they contacted me and said, hey, we'd like you to do an event. How much would you charge for an honoraria? Like, I didn't even know that there was an honoraria. I didn't know authors, you know, charged libraries to do such things. And so I wrote them back and I said, well, you know, once you reach a certain level of literary notoriety, very difficult to negotiate your own honoraria. I said, mine's the same as it's always been, a six-pack of Rainier beer, cans preferred. Well, the problem with that, of course, was that it got in all the newspapers, and subsequently, I have done every library in Wyoming, but I haven't bought beer in about 7 years, so it's worked out, you know, to be mutually beneficial for all of us. And the only time it ran me into trouble was is that I had a little novella, the Spirit of Steamboat, that was picked as the state read for the state of Wyoming, and they actually, you know, I was down at the state library where they were going to kick off the state read. And, you know, the librarian brought out the 18-pack of Rainier beer and sat it down in front of me, and she said, this was kind of hard to get. And I said, well, yeah, I know, it's kind of a working-class, blue-collar kind of beer. A lot of the bars don't carry it anymore. And she said, no, you don't understand. The distributors had a hard time getting it. And I said, well, yeah, I know. If the bars don't carry it, though, the distributors don't carry it. She goes, no, you still don't understand. They're out of beer. And what had happened was, is about 2 weeks into the TV show Longmire, everybody saw Walt Longmire drinking Rainier beer, and they ran him out of beer. And it sounded kind of funny. I thought, I don't know if I believe that or not. So I called them up. I called up their national headquarters in Irwindale, California, and said, hey, are you guys? And they said, yeah, we've been brewing this beer since, Prohibition broke. And we've had a sudden increase of sales like that, unlike anything we've ever had before. And we have no idea what's going on. And I said, well, I have what we call in my business a clue. So I told them all about it. They were kind of pleased to be the signature drink of the Wyoming Sheriff.
The power of popular culture. Yeah, that's wonderful.
Absolutely.
By the way, speaking of the television series, A&E canceled it, but you've been picked up by Netflix.
We have. We had a little stumbling block there, where we were the highest-rated scripted drama in that network's history. They decided to cancel us like that, which was, kind of silly on their part, because from what I understand, their ratings have gone down about 36% since they dropped Longmire like that. But we had another horse to ride. Netflix stepped in and said, hey, we'll take this TV show. Look at, and they just released just last month the fourth season of Longmire, which is kind of wonderful because we really don't have any commercial breaks over at Netflix, and so each of the episodes, previously on basic cable were about 42 minutes in length like that, but I have yet to see an episode yet or read an episode yet that's been under an hour long like that, and the response has been pretty wonderful.
And I read the reason, one of the reasons A&E gave was the demographic was too old.
That was kind of the spin that A&E tried to put on it. It was kind of funny because what it boiled down to was is they really wanted to own the show. Warner Brothers produces the show, and then they license it to A&E, or did license it to A&E, so that they could broadcast it. And the difficulty with that was is that A&E decided they would make a lot more money off their highest rated scripted drama if they owned it. Well, the problem with that was, of course, that Warner Brothers wasn't likely to sell it to them since it was a hit, and also the fact that they were, had it licensed for over 100 countries around the world. And so they told A&E they wouldn't sell it to them. A&E got all angry and said, if you don't sell it to us, we'll cancel it. And Warner said, well, you're going to look kind of funny canceling the highest rated scripted drama you ever had. One thing I've learned in 3 years of dealing with Hollywood is don't underestimate their intelligence, because you can't dig that low. And so they did. They canceled the show. And it was kind of silly like that, but we were fortunate enough that Netflix picked it up. And so, in the firefall like that happened after they canceled the show, there was a big movement on social media. A lot of people were very angry. This is a show that was pulling in 6 million viewers a night like that, and they were just angry. And so, the network figured out, that they had a PR nightmare on their hands. So what they did was they decided they'd put a spin on it and say, well, the show wasn't pulling in the proper demographic, and that's why it was that we decided to cancel it. Well, because it really doesn't matter. We really were looking for more of that 18 to 49 demographic, and that really doesn't matter. Well, let me tell you who you do not want to get angry in this country: everybody over the age of 49, because they've kind of been to the rodeo, got their buckle, and they're kind of happy to tell you what they think, and boy, did they ever. The Longmire posse and everybody kind of landed on A&E pretty hard like that, and so it got to the point where I started feeling sorry for A&E like that, so it worked out all for the best for us to be over at Netflix.
That's the secret of the power of AARP, older folks. Older folks vote. Older folks get involved.
I beg your pardon?
Older folks vote and they get involved.
They do. They're not afraid.
I wonder, we just have about 3 or 4 minutes left. I want to talk about Henry Standing Bear and the fact that Sheriff Longmire has an Indian friend. I didn't refer to him as Native American because I read another interview that you said that I guess your Indian friends laugh at that term.
They do. Whenever I try and be politically correct, I mean, my ranch is just to the south of the Crow Northern Cheyenne Reservation, so I've got a lot of friends, neighbors, practically family, up on the reservation. I use them, freely as characters in my books. Unfortunately, the books and TV show are very popular up there like that. But, they don't let me get away with very much political correctness. Every time I try and use the term Native American, they always look at me and say, where were you born? And I say, well, I was born in America. So you would be a Native American, too. Like that. So it's kind of fun like that to try and be honest, you know, about them the same way I'm honest about that contemporary American West. I mean, they're my friends and family, and they're just they're amazing people. I mean, the character that you mentioned, Henry, is actually based off of a good friend of mine, Marcus Red Thunder. You know, whenever I have any kind of questions or anything like that about what's up on the res or issues that I want to try and, like, you know, raise or deal with, like that, he's the first one that I go to.
I've got Sherman Alexie coming in on Thursday. I'll ask him the same question. How do we refer to Native American or Indian?
Well, I'm sure that Sherman will have a hilarious answer. Like, he's a magnificent writer, and he's pretty darn funny, is all I can say.
Yeah, it helps a lot, doesn't it? Sense of humor.
It does. Well, it's also like that. I think that there's, you know, I mean, whenever you see, you know, Native Americans, you know, I'll use the term once, like it, they're always portrayed as these stoic, you know, humorless, you know, kind of characters, and you know, the cigar store, you know, Indian kind of character. And I got to admit, like that's not the Indians that I know. I mean, the Northern Cheyenne and the Crow work on about 17 different layers of irony, and if you're not aware of that irony, you get to be the butt of that irony.
Yeah.
So for me, it's an important thing to include, because I don't think there's any more horrifying way, like of dehumanizing a group of people, is to pretend that they don't have the higher functions of humor. You know, all the Indians I know have a sense of humor. I try and include that as much as I can in the books.
Yeah, I've had some Indian friends as well, and as you say, a lot of different layers. I'm never sure whether laughing at me or with me, you know, because I'm. Not quite totally
well,
in the culture,
John,
of course.
Steinbeck said it best on American Americans. He said, you know, that the Indians have an incredible sense of humor. They've had to. They put up with us for over 200 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. About a minute, I wanted you to talk a little bit about Vic. I guess you wanted
the
urban character.
Sheriff, you know, in the books. Yeah, she's kind of the urban voice, you know, that's in the books. I mean, writing novels is a little like conducting a choral group. You know, you've got all these different voices that you're going to utilize, you know, to tell the story that you want to tell, like that. And so, you know, for me, it was important to try and include a very urban voice, you know, within this very rural county, like it. And so I came up with this character, Victoria Moretti, who's a transplant. You know, she was a 5-year, you know, highly decorated police officer there in Philadelphia. And, you know, came with her husband, like that, who was a, you know, petroleum engineer, a coal engineer, like that, and ended up, you know, in this county, like that, and is the undersheriff. And she's a pretty good balance, you know, with Walt. I mean, whenever I came up with her, you know, I mean, Walt, I knew was going to be male. You know, I thought, okay, the undersheriff should be female. You know, Walt is rural. She's urban. Walt is, you know, more capable in the social implications of the job. You know, he knows the history of the county and the people and all of that. And she's more knowledgeable of the technical aspects, you know, having gone to the largest police academy in the United States. And so it kind of makes for an interesting, you know, counterbalance, you know, between the two of them. Walt's very careful with the type of language that he uses, and Vic is careful in different ways. Like that. And it makes for another voice within those novels that I think makes them more worth reading.
We have reached the end of our time here. The new books are Wait for Signs. It's a collection of 12 Longmire stories, and the novel is Dry Bones. Craig Johnson is coming to Utah for an event for the King's English Bookshop. This event is not at the bookshop. It's at the Viridian Event Center in West Jordan, and it's Thursday evening at 7 o'clock. Craig Johnson, been a pleasure. Thank you.
Absolutely my pleasure. Thank you so much.
And coming up tomorrow, we're going to look ahead to Halloween. We'll be talking with Jeannie Thomas, a USU English professor. She's out with a new book, Putting the Supernatural in Its Place. She explores zombies, vampires, witches, demented nuns, mediums, and ghosts in their natural and unnatural habitats, and takes a look at the supernatural on the internet as well. All of that tomorrow. And, of course, on Thursday, you'll want to join me for a conversation with Sherman Alexie. Thanks for joining me today.
Access Utah is a production of Utah Public Radio. You can listen to this episode or previous episodes of Access Utah anytime at upr.org, where you can find a link to subscribe to our podcast. This is Utah Public Radio, KUSR HD1 Logan, KUSK HD1 Vernal, KUSL HD1 Richfield, KUST HD1 Moab, KCEU Price, and KUSU FM HD1 Logan.
a service of the College of Humanities and Social Science at Utah State University. This is Utah Public Radio. The time now is 10 o'clock.